It would set up a potential confrontation with the White House, which has threatened a veto. The House voted 248-177 to approve the measure, sending it to the Senate, where a similar resolution passed last year, although the Senate was controlled by the Democrats at that time and now has a Republican majority.
Maria Ressa, a Philippine journalist and vocal critic of the country's president, was arrested Wednesday on cyber libel charges. Reacting to the arrest warrant, Ressa said that she was shocked that the rule of law has been broken to the point that I can't see it, end quote. The charges are over an article that Ressa's news organization published in 2012, 2 years before the Philippines cyber libel law came into effect. Ressa was a 2018 Time Magazine Person of the Year. She has been indicted multiple times on libel and tax evasion, charges that supporters have described as political and designed to silence independent media in the Philippines. Rappler's extensive reporting on President Rodrigo Duterte's brutal war on drugs has made the site and its journalists a target for Duterte's supporters.
A new report today from the New York Times has found that since pulling out of the 2015 Iran nuclear deal, the Trump administration has been expanding its campaign to cripple the economy of Iran and sabotage their military capabilities. The New York Times reported that the Trump administration has revived and accelerated a George W. Bush-era secret program to sabotage Iranian missiles and rocket launches. The program was created in tandem with those targeting Iran's nuclear infrastructure. Officials sought to disrupt Iran's missile and space rocket development program by infiltrating their aerospace supply chains, slipping in faulty parts and defective materials. Over the past 11 years, 67% of Iranian orbital launches have failed, including many communications satellite launches. Also today, a U.S. Air Force counterintelligence officer was charged with espionage after defecting to Iran and allegedly assisting Iran's intelligence agency. Monica Elfried Witt has been accused of helping Iran target her former colleagues in counterintelligence while providing details on the codename and mission of a secret Pentagon-backed intelligence operation. Trump officials today gathered in Warsaw, Poland, for an American-led multinational conference on Middle East security. The largest diplomatic gathering the Trump administration has organized yet, Iran was a primary focus. Trump's destabilizing withdrawal from the 2015 Iran nuclear deal and unilateral sanctions against Iran put U.S. policy at odds with allied nations, including Germany, France, and Britain, who protested the move. America's European allies have recently begun coalescing around a sanctions-busting barter system, circumventing U.S.-imposed restrictions on the trade of Iranian oil. Russia, Iran's most powerful ally, was also a topic of discussion, with U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo appearing in Poland for a NATO live-fire exercise. Intending to send a message to the Russian government, Pompeo visited with American NATO troops in northeast Poland, close to the Russian border. Pompeo, in a speech, criticized Russia's, quote, hybrid warfare against the U.S. and its allies, saying that he believes Russia has grand designs of dominating Europe and reasserting its influence on the world stage, and claiming that Vladimir Putin seeks to splinter the NATO alliance, weaken the United States, and disrupt Western democracies.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, February 13, 2019. Here are the main points again. The Portland City Council holds a vote on a resolution to leave the Joint Terrorism Task Force. A news report finds that the U.S. is secretly sabotaging Iran's weapons and satellite program. And Elliot Abrams comes under fire for his role in Central American wars of the 1980s and in Venezuela today. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories and tips at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast is the director of Evening News and Public Affairs is Rachel Hartley. A podcast and transcript of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K28 BH Philomath, on 104.3 FM and K220 HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Alex Rielinger.
And I'm Erin J. Bernard. Coming up tomorrow morning on KBOO at 7, it's Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez. At 8, it's Voices from the Edge with host Joanne Hardesty, who will be updating us on the campaign to take Portland out of the Joint Terrorism Task Force. At 9, Teresa Mitchell hosts Press Watch, the news you're not supposed to know. At 10, The Heather McCoy Show features Josh Bivens from the Economic Policy Institute, looking at Airbnb's effect on local rents. In the second half, Catherine Radeka and Linda Winnett from Family Promise of Clark County talk about what you can do to help houseless people. At 11 on Between the Covers, David Naiman speaks with poet Alicia Robbins about her new book, Fruit Geode. At 11:30 on Words and Pictures, the creative team of writer Pamela Ribin and Portland artist Kat Ferris talk about their new graphic novel, My Boyfriend is a Bear. All of this KBOO programming is made possible by member support. To become a member, go to kboo.fm and click on the button marked Donate. Now, KBOO News poet Dan Raphael isn't joking about global warming.
One of the first stages of grief is denial. Like we know the earth is dying and can't do squat about it because we don't have the money or the power. And those in charge say, don't worry about your asthma, your hunger, your debt, because all they care about is their wealth, their distance from us, their denial of responsibility. If we stop using all fossil fuels right now, the world will still warm 3 degrees, which is amazingly huge, changing every species' comfort and survival zones, melting a lot of ice, making hundreds of millions move, disrupting water supplies as the weather changes, as growing food becomes more unpredictable. We can tax carbon and fossil fuel subsidies, public money for renewable energy, research and training, engage our alleged genius and passion, as if the history of humans on Earth has been school and this is the final exam, comprehensive, our time's almost up, pass or fail. For Poetic Justice, this is Dan Raphael. One of the...
And now it's time for News from the Boo, the weekly segment from people inside of and around KBOO, with news from your community radio station.
Good evening. You are listening to News from the Boo. I'm your host, Mike Crenshaw, and this is the weekly news segment talking about news from in and around the KBOO community. As you know, I work at Alliance at Benson as a teaching artist, and I have another special guest, Angie Jimenez, with me tonight, and we're going to talk about this project that you're working on, an interview project.
Yeah.
So... Angie, can you tell us what is the project about? What's the scope of the project?
What I'm working on right now, it's about the Mayan culture, specifically about Yucatan.
Okay.
And I just want people to know more about my culture.
Uh-huh. So for those of us listening that might not know, where is Yucatan at?
It's in part of Mexico and mostly like in the Central America part. And it's like right at the tip.
Okay. So it's at the southern tip of Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
And what country is immediately south of Mexico? Is it Honduras?
No, it's like by closer to Guatemala. We're closer to them.
So when you and I were talking briefly, this project is about your Mayan heritage, but it's also about Mayan culture.
Yeah.
Okay. And you mentioned that people, when they think of Mexico, they tend to think of Spanish-speaking people, and they tend to think of Aztecs.
Yeah.
So can you speak a little bit more and elaborate?
Well, the reason why I wanted to do this is because a lot of people consider Mexicans as one whole culture, mm-hmm. and they don't know the individuals. And my culture is like so different to what Mexican people and what Mexico celebrates. We have different traditions. Mm-hmm. We eat different. We talk different. And people really don't know about that. Mm-hmm. They always just, like I said, they consider Mexican just one whole culture. Mm-hmm. And they don't. I feel like I want people to know not about more than one culture that goes around Mexico than just one. Mm-hmm. And I feel like people see more of the Mexican culture than they do see other cultures. Like there's Honduras, there's Guatemala, and those two different have different cultures. Mm-hmm. They learn different, and that's what I want people to know about.
So when we think of Central America, we tend to kind of force it into this monolithic culture based on national identity.
Yeah.
And what you're talking about is more of the specific ethnic identities that exist in mm-hmm. Central America.
Yeah.
So your people are Mayan people. Mm-hmm. And can you tell us some things that differentiate Mayan culture from other national and ethnic identities in Central America and Mexico?
Well, to start off, we have a different language. It's called Mayan. Well, that's how I know it as.
Mayan,
yeah. Uh-huh. A lot of people consider us Indians. But, I mean, I consider myself too. I wasn't born there, but I was raised. And the way my culture is like we're all close. Mm. I mean, Mexican people are too. But I feel like since my community is so small, everyone gets to know each other a lot. They know individuals. Mm-hmm. And, like, they know, they always refer themselves as, like, the old ancestors. They always go, they follow through their religion, where half of my culture is like really religious, and they have to dress up like a different way, and we have different foods. My culture is like what we wear is what everyone has to wear. Hmm. Everyone follows through. Hmm. It's not like people here, it's like you can wear whatever you want. Mm-hmm. When you go there, you'll just see one person wearing the same thing, all of us, and the guys do too.
Okay. So that I've been to Guatemala and Mexico and a couple of other places in mm-hmm. Central America, and I think I've seen people who are Mayan. You know, I know I've gone on tours, like medicine tours in the rainforest and to caves with Mayan guides. Mm-hmm. When you talk about what people wear, since we tend to identify with how people look and what they eat mm-hmm. and the language that they speak when we think of cultures other than our own culture, mm-hmm. what are you talking about? What do people look like when they're wearing traditional Mayan?
So for women, we have a clothes called a terno. And what a terno is it's made out of hand. Every flower you see on it, it's made by personal hand, like someone takes their time and makes it.
It's like embroidered,
yeah. Mm-hmm. And we have this event called La Vaqueria, and it happens September 13th through the 16th. And on the first night, everyone, every city that is around us comes to the church, and they do like a prayer and everything, and then after it's like a big celebration where everyone comes, and the ladies are wearing a terno filled with like their hair is filled with flowers, and they have this, everyone's supposed to wear this red like a scarf around their dress, and each guy wears what it's called a guayavera. It's a white like a button-up shirt, and it has like some lines on it.
In the two pockets,
yeah. And they always wear, it's either like black pants with what we called huaraches. Mm-hmm. It's like some sandals meant for guys. Mm-hmm. And in the celebration, what we do is just like we celebrate our living. And we kill a pig and we carry the pig's head. Mm-hmm. And that signifies us as our new life.
Okay.
And we have the pig in a set up in the pool, mm-hmm. where all the ladies wearing their ternos dance around it,
mm-hmm.
and they make it into a braid,
mm-hmm.
and that's what we signify as life. The braid
around the pole.
The pole, yeah.
And the head of the pig is on top of the pole.
Yeah, and mm-hmm. every lady that has their terno is dancing around it, trying mm-hmm. to make the braid until it ends.
Mm-hmm. So they're going in circles around the pole.
Yeah.
Now, this reminds me of the Maypole festivals and ceremonies that I've heard of, and I'm not actually sure where those originate, mm-hmm. but I've heard of people talking about them here. That happens in springtime. This festival, this ceremony you're talking about, what time of the year does it take place?
During September.
During September?
Yeah.
So does it signify the end of the summer going into autumn?
Yeah, but before mm-hmm. this celebration happens, we have what is called a corrida.
Mm.
And this happens during June and July.
Mm.
And this signifies as more like a community thing because we don't have a stadium. So my culture, what they do is we all the guys get together, and they, since the beginning of the year, they always we have what, like, little ranches,
mm-hmm.
and we grow like limes and like oranges, and like the branches of the tree, they collect it, so the day that the corrida comes,
mm-hmm.
they build a stadium out of like wood or
mm-hmm.
sticks or anything.
Yeah.
To make a stadium for everybody, and each seat that they have mm-hmm. has a family, like it's meant for a family. Mm-hmm. You can't just go and just be like, oh, I'm gonna sit here. It's like especially made for a family, and that's what like makes the whole stadium even bigger.
Mm-hmm.
It's like it's a family doing it, or like the whole community doing it.
Right.
And what we do at the celebration is like a rodeo. Mm-hmm. Like bulls come, and like we try to, our first bull that comes out has to be killed, because that same day that we celebrate it, people get in line to buy this meat from the bull.
Mm-hmm.
So then that later on in the night we make what it's called chocolomo.
Mm.
And every family eats it because we have a fresh bull, and people, they're like, since I live here, I seen that like people, like it's not right for people to kill animals.
Yeah, I was just thinking about what if a vegan person went to this festival.
Yeah, see, there no one is vegan. They don't know what vegan is.
Yeah.
They don't know nothing about that. So they think it's right for them to kill animals,
mm-hmm.
even if it's not right for us.
Like,
when I first went there, I was like, this is not right. Like, if you guys were back in the United States, mm-hmm. you would literally go to jail for this.
Yeah.
And people, it's entertaining for them.
Yeah.
Because after that, they get food off of it.
Yeah.
And people live off of that.
But that's, I think, eating to sustain the community and yourself is different than killing animals for fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a big difference,
big,
right?
Big difference, yeah. But people, it's entertaining for them. It's not entertaining for me because I see it different, and I was taught different because of it.
Yeah.
And they don't get that.
Mm-hmm.
It's like they need it. They're in need of food.
Yeah.
Like for them, it's so hard for them to live, to get food. Like my grandma,
mm-hmm.
she works at this place called La Empacadora.
Mm.
And it's like, it's a warehouse, but they built this warehouse. My family built the warehouse so other people could have money.
Mm-hmm.
So what they do is, like, they got workers, and every worker that has a ranch picks limes and oranges and takes it to the empacadora so that my grandparents could sell it
mm-hmm.
to bigger companies or bigger stores, and that's how they get their money off. Because before, my grandma literally had to go under a cave after, she didn't even go to school. She went just like for her first grade. And then after that, she was just working. Like, she had to wash people's clothes,
mm-hmm.
knit under a cave just so that my parents can have money
mm-hmm.
or like they can have food.
Okay.
They had to like literally struggle for them to get food.
So you're saying that there's been some community and communal efforts to create prosperity that is shared.
Yeah.
So people are supporting each other's livelihood by coming together with their resources.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. That's good. Do you, what is the name of the town in Mexico that your people are from?
My parents are from Tan. Tan, Yucatan.
Tan?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. How would I spell it?
D-Z-A-N.
D-Z-A-N. Mm-hmm. And the Yucatan is on the Atlantic side, mm-hmm. the Caribbean coast.
Yeah.
Are there Mayans that also span to the west coast of Mexico?
Yeah, there is like Guatemalan people.
Mm-hmm.
They're Mayans too,
right.
But they have a different language.
Okay.
They also have a different culture.
Okay.
Because I have a couple friends that are like that, and some of their Mayan, because I understand Mayan fluently, I just really can't speak it.
Okay.
But when they like when I see my friends speaking to their parents, their Mayan is kind of similar to us. Like, I could understand some things, but then the rest is just like it's way different.
I'm learning a lot by listening to you, and I appreciate you sharing your understanding of your culture with us. So what I'm hearing you say is that Mayan is a culture, it's a people, it's an ethnicity,
mm-hmm.
okay? But within the Mayan culture and ethnicity, there's a diaspora that spreads out, not just in Mexico, but to other countries in Central America.
Yeah.
And within that diaspora, there are different languages spoken amongst the Mayan people.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it's crazy.
I bet a lot of people listening did not know that.
Yeah. I thought Mayan was just Yucatan people.
Yeah.
That's really all I thought until I started knowing more about it and actually thinking like, damn, there's really other Mayans out there with different languages, with different cultures. That's why I wanted to do this project, because people really don't know about us. Like,
mm-hmm.
if you go to, like when you go into high school and you take history class, they'll literally only tell you a specific part of Aztecs.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody, like when I used to go to my other school, they really taught me about Mayans taking other people's land and how Mayans were really bad and like all this stuff, but they really didn't talk about the in-depth stuff, like about their language, what they do for their people.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I wanted to do this project, especially because like now that my grandma's here,
mm-hmm.
and she just comes and just looks at everyone so different, and people don't really understand her the way her like she lived or like how she grew up. People really didn't know about that until she actually started like telling me stories, and it's was so interesting to me, because like even if they don't have money, they figure out a way to still keep living, to still have fun, to like do all this stuff. And like here it's just like, if you don't have money, you can't do this.
Yeah.
And there's is so much crazy, like,
so what I hear you saying is that there's an element of the culture that predates European economic
mm-hmm.
systems that were introduced, that we're all used to now.
Yeah.
You know, where money dominates what we're able to even think of.
Yeah.
You know, what's possible is dictated. So that, are you saying that some of the spirit of the people that existed before that happened is part of what's still there?
I think so.
Okay.
Yeah.
Hmm. When the ceremonies happen in the festivals, you say in the Yucatan, there's your town of San, and then people come from other cities.
Yeah, we have like we have Mani, we have what people call like Playa del Carmen, like Cancun.
Mm-hmm.
That's someone I'm pretty sure everyone wants to go to, because it's like a really pretty, like where all the beaches are at.
Right.
We have Uxmal, we have Chichen Itza, where probably like everyone goes there too because of the pyramids. We have Cozumel, we have Uxlum,
mm-hmm.
we have a lot. These cities are so tiny.
Mm.
Like my city's probably smaller than this school, and this school is huge.
For those of you who are local, who live in Portland, the school we're in is Benson High School.
Yeah.
It's a lot. It's a huge school, but you're saying the city that your folks are from is smaller than this building.
Yeah, like my grandma's from my mom's side is the last house of the little city, and my grandma from my dad's house is the beginning of the little city. So it's literally just like one whole street.
Yeah.
And there's a big church there. So it's just like a really small town, everything cramped up.
So there's a traditional religion that predates the Spaniards coming and bringing Catholicism. So do Mayans practice a mix of the traditional pre-Columbian religions and
and
Catholicism?
Yeah, both.
Okay.
Some people have believe in different religions, but since my community is really small, we don't really not involve other people that are not in other religions. We don't really care about the religion. We just care about, like, our people.
Okay.
If everyone's doing good, then we're good.
Right.
We don't really, like, if you're Christian, then, like, that doesn't matter to us.
Yeah.
As long as, like, if you're good to me, then I'm good to you.
Do you know what some of the older religions, could you say anything that would describe them that people could relate to and have an understanding or idea about what they might be like or how they might be similar to other religions that people tend to be familiar with, right? Like, there's Judaism, the big three, Christianity, Buddhism.
Well, for, like, from my experience of my grandma, she wasn't really involved into church until, like, she had bad, like, experiences back then, and, like, she thought that going to church would, like, free her. Plus, because, like, my grandma, at the age of 4, her mom died, so she was basically alone. And she said, what she told me is, like, church always helped me. Like, I opened up to God. She really didn't explain what kind of religion she was in, but going to church for her meant a lot because she opened up herself, even if she didn't have anybody. Mm. And all I really know is, like, what my culture religion is, like, Christianity and Catholicism.
Yeah,
that's mostly, like, around where we're from. We don't really have other religions that like
actively practicing.
Yeah,
it's a trip. I'm going to get into some broader questions. Yeah. Starting with an item you mentioned, the Guayabera. So when I was younger, some people that I was cool with and myself, we were into those shirts because they're cool shirts.
Ooh, yeah.
But we associated them with Cuban culture. We thought they came from Cuba. So they're shirts that are worn throughout the region, Latin America and the Caribbean.
Yeah.
So are those shirts Mayan in origin?
I believe. Yeah.
Yeah.
And those it's not just one style too. Like there's different colors. Probably like our traditional one is like a creamy color. It's not like a full white.
I know what you're talking about.
And I know Guatemalan people wear a lot of like a burgundy one, like a wine color, or like a blue.
Okay.
It's either one of those. But I know where I'm from, it's like a creamy color.
Right, right. Now, it's a trip because I've spent some time in the Philippines, and there they have what's called a barong, and it's very similar to a guayabera, and they're cream-colored shirts. And the men wear them with traditionally they wear them with black pants.
Black pants,
yeah. You know, so there's some similarities I see there.
Yeah, I did not know that.
Yeah.
Because I have a couple of people that be wearing their clothes, like the guayaberas too, and it's so funny because I would just be like, where are these people from? Like, did they go to where we're from too and they get these shirts?
Right.
That's what I always like think. But yeah, now people are like, probably like, these guayaberas are probably like everywhere.
So something I relate to as a black person, so-called African-American, somebody of African descent that's traveled back and forth to Africa, and somebody who's observed and supported in solidarity with a lot of my friends and comrades who identify as First Nations and Native American people here, there's sometimes political movements based around identity, national identity, and ethnicity in relationship to history and struggles for liberation. So something I'm curious, you mentioned early in our conversation, you said some people consider themselves Native American, some people don't. Where do you see your personal relationship to First Nations people in the Western Hemisphere as a Mayan? And is there any political consciousness that goes along with that for you?
Not really.
Okay.
I don't... When I see, like, Native Americans, I really... I feel like we're the same people.
Okay.
Like, just because, like, my, like, what I've learned from, like, history, like, Mayans and Native Americans were both here, like, during the same time. And it's just, like, for myself, I don't care if you're, like, black, white, Native American. If you respect me, I'm gonna respect you. I till this day, like, even I tell my brothers, like, it does not matter what color you are, what religion you are. If they're cool with you, you should be cool with them.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like discriminating people. I just don't really think as, like, my grandma, she always considers herself Native American.
Right.
And, my, like, with Mayan.
Yeah.
My parents never even, like, told me anything about being, like, being against Native Americans. Since my grandma always tells us, you're straight up Indian.
Yeah.
You look Indian. Like, oh, that's just what I grew up with. When I was younger, I thought I was Indian myself. Mm-hmm. Until, like, I actually started learning about my culture, and they're not different. They can be different in some way, but we're the same people.
Yeah. It's a trip, like, when we think about identity and really deconstruct it. Like, mm-hmm. a lot of it isn't based on concepts and ideas that we determine for ourselves.
Yeah.
A lot of it is based on concepts and ideas that were put on us, that were imposed upon people. So when we think, a lot of people in the United States, we think America means the United States of America. Yeah. But America actually goes all the way from this, like, subarctic region, mm-hmm. right? North